Do you feel any danger in the United States of what we were alleged to feel here some years ago, a tendency towards monopoly?
Well, I think that is a distinct danger in the United States. We know that there has been an increasing concentration of ownership of newspapers in chains, and that as a result, a number of papers have folded up, including papers which were desirable additions to journalism.
We've suffered from some extent.
Of course, yeah. There has been a tendency in this country to reduce the number of newspapers with the group system. But on the whole, I see no objection to the groups in this country. The one thing I do regret is that it has led to the extinction of certain newspapers in provincial cities, leaving just one paper for an area. I think in every large area of population, there should be at least two newspapers.
I'd like to ask Francis Williams to explain the press council that was recommended by the Royal Commission. Is it supposed to control the press, or how is it supposed to function?
It's not supposed to control the press. It's supposed to be rather a court of appeal to which either the journalist who feels that in the course of his employment he is required by his employers to do things which are contrary to the real role of the press, or also to which a member of the public or an institution or organization which feels that its activities have been not libeled in the strict legal sense, but have been travestied in the press, can appeal, and that the press council would be in a position representing proprietors, leading journalists, and some members of the public, as the Royal Commission proposed, to consider these cases, to issue its judgment on them, and by its existence and by the fact that such cases would be brought up to it, would be able to exercise a restraining influence, shall we say, on the most excessive developments of some sides of modern journalism.
With no punitive powers?
No, I think no punitive powers at all.
I think we ought to make it clear to the listener that at the moment it is entirely proposed that this should be voluntary from the press. But perhaps Mr. Robbins could explain a little more.
Well, there are, of course, different schools of thought on the Press Council. Some proprietors are completely opposed to it, others and some working journalists favour a press council, provided that the members consist solely of members of the journalistic profession. They do not like the idea of representatives of the public on the commission. I think they would even oppose an independent chairman. They think that a press council composed from the press alone could set its house in order, but of course that is the difficulty which is raised. It would have, as far as I can see, no punitive power. It would have a power to caution people, but of course it has no discipline at all.
I wonder if either Robbins or Williams could tell us the arguments for and against the council briefly.
Mr. Robbins?
That's a very big question, but the argument for the council is that there is need for some kind of body, rather on the lines of the General Medical Council, or even the Bar, the Law Society, which could keep a supervision over the behaviour of the members of the profession. I regard journalism as a profession, but I want to keep that status at that level. The only way I can see that can be done is by a voluntary press council, and personally I think that the newspapers will be well advised to accept something on the lines of a press council rather than take the risk of having it imposed on them. I think it would be much more striking on the part of the newspapers to do it themselves.
I on the whole would agree with that. You see, I feel that in the press, as in many other walks of life, we do have to consider the counterbalances of power. And at the moment, certainly on many papers, the main balance of power is an economic balance of power, in that the newspaper man knows that if he is instructed to do something by his editor, acting, shall we say, either as an editor or in the furtherance of particular ambitions or policies of his proprietor, which he himself thinks run outside the proper responsibilities of a journalist. He knows that if he refuses to do so, then he may well lose his job, and with a smaller number of papers, and a rather overcrowded profession at the present time, may not be able to find another one. And it's placing a very heavy responsibility indeed upon a newspaper man, who, in addition to being a newspaper man, is probably a family man with a wife and children and so on to support.
But I've been in this business for 25 years, Francis, and worked on half a dozen different newspapers, and never in that entire time have I ever received an instruction to slant a story or distort a story or in any way practice my profession in any way but what I would choose to do myself?
Well, I could vouch for the same experience, but I would like to add that I think that the journalist himself often has the decision, and that we probably have all met the case of the journalist who tries to anticipate the views of the owner of his newspaper and write what he thinks would be welcome to the owner, instead of following a completely independent line and reporting truthfully regardless. So I think the main responsibility there rests with the journalist himself.
I agree, Mr. Daniels. And there's a rather amusing little story I can tell you about that. Covering a political convention one time, I sat next to a man from an agency who asked me what my lead was going to be, and I told him. He said, well, I could never get away with that. He said, I've got to go for the usual old line. He did. His paper used the agency's, another agency story on page one with the same lead that I was sending.
Mr. Robbins is a news editor. Have you any views on this?
Yes, I don't think it's so much the slant of a story. I think it is certain newspapers anxious to sell easy copies do occasionally are guilty of intrusions into, as we call it here, private grief. There have been one or two very bad cases. I'm not sure always whether it's the journalist who is at fault or the photographer. And in fairness to the initial photographers, I think this has happened on more than one occasion by non-journalistic photographers who think that by obtaining a very hurried picture, which is very badly wanted, they're doing a very good piece of work for themselves, not caring anything for the paper in which it appears or for the relatives. I think very often the journalist has been rather maligned over this intrusion into private grief, but I do know of cases where a reporter had been called on to perform a very distasteful task. And I think if there was the press council, I think a news editor or editor would think twice on sitting on any assignment like that if he knew that the man had a right of taking his complaint to a higher court.
Yes, I think we've strayed back to technique, and I wonder if we have time just for a moment to consider the press in relation to the international situation as it is today. Our two democratic presses, are they fulfilling their role in regard to the world situation? Mr. Daniel, any views?
Well, I think that in attempting to do that, we're rather handicapped by our inability to get correspondence into the other half of the world. And even when we succeed in getting them in there, they're so circumscribed in their movements and so hemmed in with restrictions that with the best will in the world, it's impossible to give an accurate picture of what's happening there. To that extent, I say we're failing.
Can our newspapers handle, apart from that, which I think is a block we will all admit, are we handling the news that is within our scope effectively and truthfully within the growing Cold War? Williams?
I would say yes, on the whole. I mean, in any profession, and particularly in one which always has time's hurrying feet behind it, like journalism has, where you have to take snap decisions and so on, it's inevitable that from time to time people can quote cases which seem to go the other way. But on the whole, I would say yes, and I would say that both the British and the American press are, on the whole, giving a much better and fuller examination and lead on the current international situation than many of them did on the international situation before the last war. I think, for various reasons, there has been a fuller attempt to explain differences between the West and the East, always handicapped by the inability to get the East's point of view from an independent reporter. The only problem is, of course, is the old problem to which I referred earlier, that much news, in the eyes of many of the popular papers, only becomes important when it becomes sensational, and so you see the peaks of the international situation without all the valleys and the general land in between, which would give you a more coherent picture.
Yes, I think there's too much of a tendency to treat world news as a sporting event, like a football match.
Yeah.
A succession of dramas.
I would say that the newspapers in this country certainly are really clamoring for real news from behind the Iron Curtain. But we will not take propaganda news or highly censored news. If we could be sure of independent reporting, we would place correspondents in the countries where now it is no use sending men. But we do badly need news, and I think we're, as I say, gasping for news, really effective from behind the curtain.
Mr. Gould?
Well, I should agree that any newspaper reader who wants the Eastern and the Western case should have access to it, that the volume of news published in the West from broadcasts issued from the East, from speeches by Eastern statesmen, politicians, diplomats, and quotations from their press can be offset against the views issuing from our own governments. And that any reader who is anxious to do so can form his own judgment without accepting any ready-made view.
Yes, the report from the United Nations are fairly informative.
And, of course, in New York and in London, in each capital, there is at least one newspaper which puts the point of view of the East quite steadily every day. You can pay a penny for it here and buy it. And that seems to me one example of the freedom of the press that we try to practice in both our countries.
Yes.
Mr. Williams?
I don't think that the British and American press, taken by and large, remembering that when you talk about the press, you're really talking about a great many different units, often appealing to quite different levels of public, and therefore inevitably having a different treatment and a different selection of news. But I would say that the press of both countries as a whole are fulfilling their role and their responsibilities fairly adequately at the present time. I think the British press is very much handicapped from fulfilling that role by its shortage of newsprint, by the very small papers which make it impossible to give much of that kind of background which is desirable. When I was in the States last year, I was very much struck by the immense more amount of detailed information you could get from the American press than from the British press, not because of any lacking on the part of British journalists, but simply because of that physical fact.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, and thank you all. I think we've all thrashed round an immensely diverse and varied subject. It seems to me we've flung out ideas for each other, which will probably keep us talking long after the London Forum has ceased. And I hope we've flung out ideas for listeners, which will keep them talking. I don't think we've reached any conclusions at all, but this doesn't seem to me the kind of discussion in which people can reach conclusions. We pose questions, we make rather dogmatic statements, and we leave it to others to argue afterwards.
You have been listening to a discussion in the weekly series London Forum, recorded in a studio of the British Broadcasting Corporation. The speakers were Raymond Daniel, Francis Williams, Frederick Koo, and Alan Pitt Robbins. The chairman was John Connell. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.